Corner number three for Nigeria. Fanidi George swings it in.
BBC World Service. I'm Farai Mungazi with this week's documentary, Pity the Poor Soccer Stars.
Tackled though by Sunday Alisa, a beautiful ball into the box. Him, Yakini's in the free, and he scores!
The story of a remarkable phenomenon in African football. Over the next 2 weeks, I want to find out why so many African players go from this to this.
You know, one old guy who told me, the way you're living now, don't think about the past. If you think about the past, then you are going to destroy yourself. So I don't think about that.
What happens when you start to think of the past?
I start feeling sorry about myself. Just forget it, gone. It won't come back.
That's Elijah Litana, once a big star of African football, and part of a big problem for the sport across the continent. So many players like him have made it big from humble beginnings, only to blow their riches and end up right back where they started. In this series, I want to find out how and why this happens. I'm in Elijah's home country, Zambia, this week to gauge the problem. And next week, I'll look at one country offering some solutions, South Africa. But this is an issue all over the continent, and it's about far more than football alone. As we'll see, it goes to the very heart of African society too. Today, Elijah Litana ekes out a simple living at a rundown building that passes for a house deep in the Zambian countryside. Once the golden boy of Zambian football and a hero to the fans of the Saudi Arabian club Al Hilal, where he played, he earned in just 5 years the kind of money that most Africans could never dream of in a lifetime.
How much do you think in total you made?
That's a difficult one. Maybe a million. When you're in Saudi, you receive a lot of money. There's one time when we played a team from Japan. I think we beat them 2-1. So I was at home, I just heard the phone crying. Oh, this is Prince Khalid. Oh, I've got something for you. Then he gave me a check of $10,000 for a job well done.
You were a big star in Saudi Arabia.
Sure I was. And you know, you can do a lot of things with that money. Gambling. I used to gamble a lot.
Did you lose a lot of money?
Yeah. Yeah, very much. When we were in Lusaka, we lost about, I think, $25,000.
$25,000 gambling, you lost it all?
Yeah.
How did you feel the next morning when you woke up?
It was normal. I have got a lot of money, so it was like, I'll get some more money, so it was normal.
How is your life today?
Right now, you see that I've got no money.
The case of Elijah Litana fills me with so much sadness. Just to see him live in a place, broken windows, pretty much in the middle of nowhere, a man who had the world at his feet. He had everything going for him, and he lost it all. What's even more sobering is the fact that Elijah is not the only one in this situation. There are many great heroes of the African game who have fallen on hard times.
Others playing elsewhere will do exactly the same. They will see Elijah Litana in a hard life now, but they never learn. From rags to riches and back to rags. It's a sad story.
Veteran commentator Dennis Liwewe is known as the voice of football in Zambia. At 76, he's seen dozens of footballers piling in the cash, but also blowing most of it. He says that while there are no exact figures, anecdotal evidence suggests that footballers there are frequently coming unstuck from even the highest levels of success.
I am regarded as the grandfather of Zambian football. I've seen these boys grow up. I have pictures of the entire history of Zambian football from 1928 up to now. I've got every photograph, I've every write-up. And you look at the players in action who have earned a little bit of money. And they climb up there and then tumble down, never to return.
Many African boys long to escape the grinding poverty they are born in, and football provides a far more secure route than the rickety boats braving the open seas to Europe. Wealthy European clubs, prepared to pay a king's ransom in wages, have targeted Africa for young, raw talent. One man who knows all about this is Simata Simata. He was once chairman of City of Lusaka Football Club and has seen firsthand the exodus of local talent to rich clubs overseas. I caught up with him at a training session.
I think with the amount of money that is in football now, it can give any boy an opportunity to live a good life if he's got it up there and he's got people around him to help him. It's possible.
But Simata has a warning for the youngsters he spends his time coaching. He believes that African society is a uniquely inappropriate place for them to get sudden riches.
When it comes to football, we don't have role models, I'm sorry to say. In Zambia, from as far back as independence, there is no footballer you can point at to and say, look, emulate that guy. Look at him. He played football. He's rich. He's got property. He's looking after himself. They all end up being dependents, one way or the other.
Simata should know. One of his charges at City of Lusaka, a 17-year-old boy called Chanda Bualia, struck gold when he signed for Guimarães of Portugal. Simata himself tried to provide a role model for the youngster to follow, a task which at first appeared to have a good chance of success.
We made every effort to counsel with the young man. In fact, I personally met his father and mother. I was actually very encouraged by his father especially. And then, yes, the deal came through where we allowed him to go to Guimarães on transfer.
But when Chanda arrived in Portugal at the tender age of 17, he was all alone. A young boy born into abject poverty suddenly thrust into the bright lights of Europe. Back in Lusaka, his mentor tried in vain to keep an eye on him.
He used to phone frequently, Farai. Very, very frequently. Every week or so, I'd get a phone call from him. We'd talk, we'd chat. When I began to get 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 1 month silence, I kept saying to myself, something is wrong.
I signed a 4-year contract, and just after getting the signing fee, I said, oh, everything now has changed. Not knowing that, you know, things might come sour.
Today, Chanda's back in Lusaka, his European dream in ruins.
How much was the signing on fee?
I was told it was $80,000, but in the books, there was $20,000. Where the $60,000 went, I didn't know. I was supposed to get $20,000, and instead I got about $7,000. However, it was a lot of money. I would have built houses, you know, bought a car, nice car, you know, but that never happened anyway.
Why? What did you do with the money?
Excitement. Since I signed the 4-year contract, I thought the monies would be always there, you see, because I was doing everything by myself, and I mismanaged.
What were the mistakes that you made with money?
It all comes to clubbing, you know, buying unnecessary things, you know, forgetting that there's life after football. I was 1,000 miles away from my parents, my country.
Ideally, at his age, it would have been preferable that his family goes to Portugal with him and literally live with him like they were living with him here. But if you're a breadwinner, you cease to be a minor. You cease to be a dependent who people can scold or even warn or guide. You tend now to become a rule yourself.
My parents used to tell me when I call, but I thought, you know, I can manage myself because for the first time, I was independent.
How did it feel like for you for the first time you suddenly found yourself with money? Because here in Lusaka, you had nothing.
It changed me in a very big way. Because growing up, George Finidi was my inspiration.
George Finidi is an ex-Nigerian international.
Yes, yes, yes. So I wanted to be like him. So when I was getting that, you know, I wanted to be found where those stars were, clubbing, you know, where they were eating, staying in big hotels like the Intercontinental, you know, you wanted to be, you know, where you were dreaming to be. Forgetting that where I come from, you know, life is different from that. There was no one to tell me. I was all alone.
For Chanda, there was an added problem. While he was out spending his money, the row over his signing fee escalated. His old club back in Lusaka made frequent calls to Portugal for more money, but Guimarães were having none of it. Through no fault of his own, Chanda was becoming unwelcome.
The club got fed up. They said, you're not delivering, and your people in Zambia are disturbing us. We are just spending money. We are not getting money from you. So maybe you should go back.
You have two daughters. If they said to you, what's the greatest lesson you've learned, what would you say to them?
I regret the life they are living today. At one point, they even asked me, Dad, why don't we have a car? So why have you stopped playing football?
That, and you don't have answers?
No, I don't have. I say, no, I've got an injury, you know, such excuses.
So how do you look after them now? How do you look after your family now?
I'm a businessman. I buy clothes, cosmetics, and I'm into printing business. That's how I survive, yeah.
So basically you're doing bits and pieces to make a living?
To make a living, yeah.
It's not that every African footballer is prone to short-termism. In Zambia, the lucky few do have the help that they need. I went to a building site on the outskirts of Lusaka to meet Joe Mwala. He's the manager of Zambia's national captain Chris Katongo, the newly crowned BBC African Footballer of the Year. And as he explained to me, the construction is all about securing a future for Chris.
Chris has decided to put up such a building so that maybe on the rain day he can fall on it. You know, it's a double story, as you can see. Excellent fittings. Of course, you'll get a lot of revenue from it because I'm sure he won't stay there, he'll put it on rent, and he'll be getting quite good rentals from it.
The house is a far cry from the tumble-down shack where I had found Elijah Litana. And with a growing portfolio of such properties, Chris Katongo is unlikely to be destitute anytime soon. As it happens, this is the work of Joe himself. And as manager, he's also there to keep a fatherly eye on the players' recreational spending to make sure the contents of their wallets don't go up in smoke.
I'll give you one good example. When we played the finals, I was approached by a very big company, Pepsi. They wanted to have ambassadors for Pepsi, Zambian players. I picked Chris. So under even that contract with Pepsi, how they portray themselves to society, it's very important. Because they don't want to see their ambassador, who they expect him to be a role model to the youngsters, even to citizenry, is misbehaving, which contrary to, I'm sure, good standards of an individual. So basically, we try every day.
You consider that you're part of your job to keep an eye on what the likes of Chris Katongo are doing to make sure that he keeps on the straight and narrow path?
Every day.
It's important to remember that Africa is still relatively new to the big money of professional football. After all, it was only after Cameroon's exploits at the 1990 World Cup that African players really became big commodities with incomes to match. So, it's taking time for successful stars to learn how to handle their newfound wealth. Now, what Zambia's captain Chris Katongo is doing here augurs well for the future. Level-headed football investment. The only problem is investments like this around the continent, very few and far between. In more developed societies, professional financial advice is readily available to encourage sound investments. It could come from the player's bank or accountant or any number of consultants. But in Africa, this isn't always the case. Many players from poor rural backgrounds aren't accustomed to letting strangers take care of their money. So sometimes they can fail to match their newfound wealth with appropriate strategies to hold on to it. Dennis Liwewe again.
The African player is new in the game of money making. And as a result, he is very suspicious about somebody who says, here is, you have earned your 40 million, 50 million kwacha. and let me manage it for you because you have to give me 1%. You are cheating me, is my money. That aspect of thinking is new. So they are saying, I will do it my way. But by doing it my way, there's no experience of ending 150 million kwacha. Sometimes the player manages his own money without even a reference or advice from parents.
When people are doing well, they tend not to take advice.
Lusaka economist Yusuf Dodia.
You know, if I'm telling a trucker, a person who's got a transport company, who has 50 trucks, and I'm trying to explain to this person how they can move from 50 to 500, when I ask them to think about things that they don't like, the next question that comes from them is, show me your 50 trucks, if you think you're so smart. And I guess that's exactly the same thing that happens with the football players. They'll tell you that I'm playing for the Zambian national team, or I'm playing for this Premier Division club. So, my friend, you can give me this advice, but I'm the guy that's making it happen.
And if African youngsters are scathing about the professional finance industry, the antipathy is sometimes mutual. As Yusuf Dodia explains, consultants are often quick to differentiate between the mega-rich and the merely wealthy, happy to ignore the latter in a relatively undeveloped African market for investment advice.
I mean, if I consider a former football star, JJ Okocha, who came out of football about 5-10 years ago now, I've been up to Lagos, and in Lagos, JJ Okocha has businesses because he was taking the earnings that he was making on a weekly basis out of his football playing days and put it into very strategic businesses. And this is beginning to happen at that very top level. But I think that as our sports people are climbing up the ladder, they're not very interesting to managers until they cross a certain threshold. Because the manager's got to feel that this is a worthwhile investment for me to be associated with. So I think the ones that are up and climbing are having to struggle on their own.
So we are talking about impetuous alpha males with lots of money, but seemingly averse to fiscal probity. Young men who have few, if any, role models to guide them, and little chance of getting adequate advice from anywhere else. Far from home, often isolated and vulnerable, this can be a recipe for disaster. But there's another, perhaps more surprising problem too, because what really makes life difficult for the African player is when he gets back to the people supposed to be closest to him.
When a footballer makes money, the whole family runs to him. You know, they are going to heap all the problems they have on a poor soul.
Benedict Tembo is a football journalist with a difference. Over the past few years, he's taken it upon himself to look after players who've taken the journey from the peaks of prosperity into the abyss of despair. He's even accommodated some of them when they had nowhere to go. He says a major factor in all their stories is the constant demands of their families.
African players, especially here in Zambia, they find themselves in a unique situation. Look at the huge responsibility that player has. You know, he has almost the whole clan to look after. He has to help nieces, nephews, older and younger brothers, take them to school, even fund their fees at colleges and universities. You know, and this has to do with the extended family system in our societies. One person who emerges and is seen to be doing well, the whole family falls on that person. In our society, you have no choice but to help, even if it means parting away with your entire income.
And I think just to put it into context, it's not it just doesn't happen to players, but anybody who happens to have a bit of success.
Indeed. I mean, if you are the only one working in your family, you have cousins and their children to look after. Your uncle, your aunt, their grandchildren and their great-grandchildren to look after. You know, take to school, buy them clothes, buy them literally everything they need.
Even as footballers join the international jet set, with all its individualism and distance from home, this obligation survives. And yet, you don't have to be super wealthy to find yourself besieged by desperate relatives. At training one day, I caught up with Jimmy Ndlovu, a 20-year-old who played in Israel before injury stopped his progress.
It was a youth contract, but my family and friends didn't know about that, so they were asking me to send them cars, to send them clothes, to send them what, whilst I was hardly getting even $1,000.
Did they understand when you said to them, sorry, I can't do it?
They never knew anything. They thought I was, you know, sleeping in a luxury home and everything like that. Whilst I was just finding a life there. It was just starting. But because of that signing of the contract, they thought I had a lot of money and everything. That's what is happening in Africa. You become a breadwinner even if you are 10. Even now, there are a lot of people that look up to me.
But you're not making anything.
I'm trying my best.
Do you sometimes wish you didn't have to do that? You just had to spend your money by yourself?
I've tried my level best not to think about that because I'm in that situation. I can't run away from it. So sometimes I say, okay, let me try to be stingy. But again, it comes back to my conscience and say, no, you have to do it. There's nothing you can do. But truthfully, I would love to just enjoy my money just all by myself.
Wow, the Zambia national soccer team! International football is now a mega-rich, globalized industry. But so many African players, for so many reasons, can find themselves ill-prepared for its trials and tribulations. Until that changes, it's left to people like the eccentric veteran commentator Dennis Liwewe to remind players of the pitfalls. He's even recorded a song to press home the lessons, but he doesn't expect much to change in the short term.
Hereby I advise, you must never be excited about the winning bonuses you have received. Be wise. Don't run amok with the new acquired wealth you deservedly.
My appeal to every African footballer is that regard yourself as one of the luckiest human beings God has ever created, in that you are making money using your talent well and good. Preserve it and keep it. But they will not listen to the advice. Sometimes the advice bounces as if you have hit the crossbar. It goes back into play or out for a throw.
Equally, it's hard to see how anyone scrimping and saving to pay their monthly bills will shed a tear for multi-millionaire footballers going bust. So is there anything that should be done? Well, that's what I'll be asking in part 2 of Pity the Poor Soccer Stars here on the BBC next week.